Hello and welcome to this weekend edition of Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. My name's Christian Falvey. Many thanks for tuning in. In a special program today, marking the 70th anniversary of the Nazi massacre at Lidice, we'll have a special extended version of Czech books. And after that, we'll take another trip through the Czech radio archives. All that coming up, so please stay tuned. This weekend is the 70th anniversary of the Nazi destruction of the village of Lidice. Shortly after the massacre, the British novelist Kathleen Hewitt wrote, "The tragedy of Lidice is part of a tragedy so great that one hesitates before daring to comment on it." But she added that words are potent weapons, as it is of words that history is made. Since the Nazis tried to wipe Lidice from the map, many, many words have been written about Lidice. It captured the imagination of writers like few other wartime atrocities. And dozens, perhaps hundreds, of novels, stories, poems, and essays have responded to the tragic events of the night from June the 9th to June the 10th, 1942. David Vaughan looks at the literary legacy of Lidice.
If the Nazis wanted to wipe the village from the map, they were spectacularly unsuccessful. They tried systematically to obliterate every physical reminder that the village had once existed, but at the same time they made no secret of what they had done. The result was that the name of Lidice became ingrained in the consciousness of the free world.
Im Zuge der Fahndungen nach den Mördern des SS-Obergruppenführers Heydrich wurden einwandfreie Hinweise dafür gefunden, dass die Bevölkerung der Ortschaft Lidice bei Kladno dem in Frage kommenden Täterkreis Unterstützung.
Lidice was a crude act of revenge. The Germans wanted to cow the Czechs into submission after the assassination of the deputy Reichs protector of Bohemia and Moravia, Reinhard Heydrich.
Sind die männlichen Erwachsenen erschossen, die Frauen in ein Konzentrationslager überführt und die Kinder einer geeigneten Erziehung zugeführt worden. Die Gebäude des Ortes sind dem Erdboden gleichgemacht und der Name der Gemeinde ist ausgelöscht worden.
Through radio, the Nazis trumpeted details of the massacre to the world, making it one of the first Nazi wartime atrocities that came fully to the awareness of the international public. Several well-known writers reacted immediately to the crime, among them Victor Fischl.
It is no more. It is no more. The tongueless bells no longer ring. Only the smoking walls remain, and one stray dog who walks alone, searching in vain from stone to stone.
Victor Fischl was a Czech poet, working for Jan Masaryk, the foreign minister in the exiled Czechoslovak government in London. As soon as he heard about the atrocity, Fischl sat down, and in the course of a single night wrote a long poem called The Dead Village. The poem is an elegy to the village and murdered villagers, but its tone is ultimately one of defiance.
Is it no more, no more? O springs of the dead village, O hives of the dead village, O corn of the dead village, O glory of the dead village, O glory of the living village.
The Dead Village was translated into English by Laurie Lee, best known today for his classic of Life in Rural England Between the Wars, Cider with Rosie. The two had met through their mutual friend, the poet Stephen Spender. Fischl's poem was also to become the starting point for Humphrey Jennings' powerful film, The Silent Village, which was shot in the months immediately after the massacre and recreated the Lidice tragedy in the Welsh mining village of Cwm Gyrth.
Achtung, Achtung! An die Bevölkerung von Cwm Gyrth! Attention, attention! To the population of Cwm Gyrth! As from today, the districts of southern and western Wales.
At the same time as the film was being made, British miners were busy establishing the Lidice Shall Live movement, and it was in this mood of solidarity that the International Pen Club, on the initiative of the British writer, diplomat and politician Harold Nicholson, compiled a literary tribute to Lidice, including poetry and prose from some of the best-known writers of the time, among them Thomas Mann, Cecil Day Lewis and Iceland's Halldór Laxness. Here are a few lines from Nicholson's introduction.
The graves at Lidice The charred remnants of the village will live forever in the memory of the Czechs, and the Czechs possess the most retentive memories in Europe. But something else will also remain. There will remain the fact that the conscience of the world was outraged by this act of vengeance, and that the tragedy of Lidice marked, in the words of that great German Thomas Mann, the gradual growth of an awareness of universal human responsibility.
The following short poem by Cecil Day Lewis is typical for the collection, combining raw anger with a cry for justice. Entitled simply Lidice, it starts with two lines from Walt Whitman. Not a grave of the murdered for freedom, but grows seed for freedom.
Cry to us, murdered village, while your grave aches raw on history, make us understand what freedom asks of us. Strengthen our hand against the arrogant dogmas that deprave and have no proof but death at their command. Must the innocent bleed forever to remedy these fanatic fits that tear mankind apart? The pangs we felt from your atrocious hurt promise a time when even the killer shall see his sword is aimed at his own naked heart.
The Pen Club anthology also includes one of the best-known poems to respond to the massacre, The Murder of Lidice, by the American poet Edna St. Vincent Millay. It is by no means great poetry, but what is striking is its appeal to Americans to realize that Lidice is not as far away as they think. Here are the last few lines.
Oh, my country so foolish and dear, careless America crooning a tune, please think, are we immune? Catch him and stop him soon. Never let him come here. Ask yourself honestly, what have we done? Who, after all, are we? That we should sit at peace in the sun, the only country, the only one, unmolested and free? Catch him. Catch him, do not wait, or will you wait and share the fate of the village of Lidice, or will you wait and let him destroy the village of Lidice, Illinois? Oh, catch him and stop him soon, never let him come here.
Also from the United States came the first response to Lidice in the form of a novel, Lidice by Thomas Mann's brother Heinrich Mann, written from his exile in California. Both brothers had been granted Czechoslovak citizenship in 1936 after fleeing Nazi Germany, so their bond to the country was strong. Like other writers responding from Britain and America just after the massacre, Heinrich Mann had no way of knowing exactly what had happened, so he avoided trying to describe details of the massacre itself. In fact, he even drew the false conclusion that the assassination of Reinhard Heydrich had been instigated from within the ranks of the SS itself, like the earlier purges of the Night of the Long Knives. The novel's strength lies in its bitter satire on the character of Heydrich himself, the Butcher of Prague, and of other Nazi officials. The novelist focuses on the strange mixture of ham theatricality and kitsch suburban taste, combined with a total lack of moral scruple that seemed common to so many of the Nazi elite. Much of the novel consists of dialogue, partly to reinforce the theatrical theme, but also to sustain a sense of pace and urgency. Here is a very short extract in my own working translation from the German, where Heydrich is talking to his more lenient predecessor as Reichsprotektor, Konstantin von Neurath.
I can't help but call you a traitor. You have treated the Czechs like a nation, but they are simply degenerated Germans. They shouldn't be placated, but re-educated, or simply hanged and shot. Students, professors, intellectuals in general should only be allowed to appear as naked corpses. You didn't grasp that till too late.
And that isn't all. Heydrich goes on to describe intellectuals as a waste product, adding with great pride that when he was a student, he failed all his exams. The old-fashioned aristocrat von Neurath humbly agrees to carry on with the execution of Czechs. All the literary reactions to Lidice I've mentioned so far have come from writers who heard about the events from a distance. They have little of the power of the accounts written by witnesses. Immediately after the massacre, with the village still in flames and the corpses of 173 Lidice men lying behind the Horak family's barn, the Gestapo summoned a group of 30 Jewish prisoners from the Terezin ghetto, about 50 kilometres north of the village, to bury the dead. Among them was František Kraus. He was a writer and journalist, and before the war he had been one of the founders of this very station, Radio Prague. Kraus went on to survive Auschwitz, and his account of what he witnessed in Lidice, in a piece called But Lidice is in Europe, must be the most powerful and moving piece ever written about the massacre. Here he describes the collapse of the parish church as he stands alongside a fellow prisoner.
Suddenly the church breaks apart. A new metallic thundering breaks up the walls. The ringing of the bells resounds clearly. There is a thumping in the tower. Flames roar up again. Then suddenly the ringing stops. Torn away from the roof, the bell hurtles down, breaks through the wooden floor, and ends with huge clattering on the stone floor. White smoke rolls out of the fallen nave. Next to me stands Karol Langendorf, young, beautiful, the composer. He stands there like a marble statue, his mouth wide open. He raises and lowers his fists. Then low singing sounds from his lips. It is Antonín Dvořák's Requiem. Requiem aeternam dona eis domine et lux, perpetua luceet eis. A cloud of decay, dust, and powder stands over his head. Beside him, the red poppies fade, and Marguerite's lower tired, innocent heads to lie down and die. Te deset hymnus, Deus in Sion, et tibi redetur. Terrible is the roaring sky over Karol Langendorf, but he goes on singing. He drowns out the terror of this time. Dies ire, dies illa solvent seculum in favilla. Teste David et Sibylla. Ploughed up and torn up, rent asunder and treeless is the spot of Bohemian land in the heart of Europe.
The apocalyptic tone of František Kraus's eyewitness account contrasts with the memories written down 6 decades later by Jaroslava Skleničková, the youngest of the women of Lidice sent to the Ravensbrück concentration camp. She was prompted by her husband, Mirek, to write down her memories for the sake of her grandchildren. Here are a few lines from her book, If I Had Been a Boy, I Would Have Been Shot. She describes the last time she sees her father.
At the gate, I stopped with father. He kissed me and said, God willing, we will see each other again, Yati. Only never forget God. His words were difficult for me to grasp, for we were definitely to return home in 2 days' time. We went to the village green together. There was a group of men standing outside the parsonage. Father had to join them, and my mother, my sister, and I were taken to the school. When we entered, there was a Gestapo man just inside with a large suitcase into which we had to put all money, savings, books and jewellery, including that which people were wearing. I said to myself that when a thief breaks into your house, it's hard for him to find things, but here the thief has people bringing everything to him in person.
Lidice has continued to spark the imagination of writers. Far too many to discuss in a short radio programme. I'll end by mentioning just a few from the more recent past. We have Louise Doughty's powerful 2003 epic of the Roma Holocaust, Fires in the Dark, in which a Romani boy witnesses the burning of the village. Then there is Josef Hurka's Before, published in 2007, which also features a fictional young boy who witnesses the massacre and is haunted by it for the rest of his life. His memories come back suddenly decades later, when, now living in the United States, he has a brain hemorrhage.
He was shouting, terrified. They were only the black walls on fire, no houses, no people left. He could not remember where he was. He could remember Anna's name, for she was there, suddenly, alarmed, leaning over him, but he was not sure if he was in Massachusetts or Seattle, or perhaps Prague.
And I should add that symbolically, Hurka's novel is set on the eve of 9/11. Meanwhile, in Wales, several writers have taken Humphrey Jennings' 1943 Lidice-inspired film The Silent Village as a starting point, among them Ewart Alexander with his play Atrocity, which is set during the making of the film, and most recently Rachel Tresize, whose short story A Child Called Lidice was published in 2009. Here in the Czech Republic, Zdeněk Mahler's book Nocturno, in which one of the Lidice men survives because he is in prison for having accidentally killed his son in a fight, was turned into a successful film in 2011. And this is just the tip of the iceberg.
David Vaughan there with that special edition of Czech Books, followed by Antonín Dvořák's Requiem. You can hear or read that special edition again and find much more about the massacre at Lidice in our archives at radio.cz/en. Science Journal will be back again next month. If you're just tuning in, then thank you for joining us. You're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. My name's Christian Falvey. Now, as ever of a Saturday, it's time for another trip down memory lane, or rather through the halls of the Czech radio archives. Again, here's David Vaughan.
In the last years of the Cold War, Radio Prague's English department was many times bigger than it is today and divided into several sections devoted to different parts of the world. One of the most important was the Afro-Asian service.
This is Radio Prague, Czechoslovakia, the Afro-Asian service.
Africa was an important Cold War battleground, and Radio Prague's Afro-Asian service was not just telling people in Africa about Czechoslovakia. It also covered events within Africa itself, following closely the Soviet political line. At one time, the department was receiving tens of thousands of listeners' letters every year.
Radio Prague's Afro-Asian service brings you a review of the past year in Africa, a year which has seen much good, but also much evil.
This is a program from 1985, a year that saw drought in many parts of Africa and devastating famine in Ethiopia.
Naturally, this fact has not escaped the attention of the people and the government of Czechoslovakia, as well as other socialist countries, who have done their utmost to help.
The assistance provided by the socialist countries was not limited to a mere one-off granting of aid. We prefer long-term assistance aimed at removing the causes of the problem and thus preventing its repetition.
Moreover, our assistance has no strings attached to it. While American Vice President Bush, for instance, let it out openly that America conditioned its help. In addition, there is the point, where did the Western assistance go to? In the case of Ethiopia, the Vice President only chose to spit out a piece of advice, namely that the social order should be changed. The country's socialist orientation, Bush claimed, caused the drought and famine.
The presenter was referring, of course, to George Bush Sr., at the time vice president in the Reagan administration. In sub-Saharan Africa, Angola was gripped by civil war between the communist government, supported by the Soviet Union, and the anti-communist UNITA rebels, backed by South Africa and the United States. In 1985, the Angolan government staged a symbolic tribunal called Children Accuse Imperialism, and this was the subject of a Radio Prague report.
The dock was empty, but everybody knew who the culprits were. Peter Botha of South Africa, Jonas Savimbi of UNITA, and Ronald Reagan of the United States. They were tried in absentia for crimes committed against children and young people in a number of African, Asian, and Latin American countries.
The broadcast included eyewitness accounts, such as this 10-year-old child from Angola.
One day, I took a ride in a truck to visit my uncle. On the way, we were attacked by the Kwachas of UNITA. A lot of people died in the truck, and the only survivors were three FAPLA soldiers, a baby, and myself. The Kwachas took us to a base in the bush. When we reached the base, the baby we were taking with us started to cry a lot. They got hold of it and beat it against a stone. It finally died.
In its summary of events in Africa in 1985, Radio Prague concluded that there was one hope for the continent's future.
There were many who, back in 1917, doubted Soviet Russia could overcome its fatal backwardness by the end of this century. It did, and so can Africa.
That's Radio Prague back in 1985. It's worth pointing out that at the time, Prague had big ambitions when it came to international broadcasting. Throughout the 1980s, a vast new radio complex was under construction that aimed to rival Radio Free Europe and Radio Liberty in Munich. It was never completed, and for many years stood derelict. It has now been rebuilt as an office block.
That was David Vaughan with From the Archives, wrapping up Radio Prague's English program for today. Many thanks to all of you who tuned in to us today, whether on satellite, internet, or shortwave. If you'd like to listen again or recommend the program to others, we are always online. Simply turn to our website at radio.cz/en, where you will also find our archive of news and features from the last 10 years and more. If you'd like to contact us, we are always happy to discuss your questions and comments. You can write to us by email at english@radio.cz, on Facebook or Twitter under Radio Prague, or, of course, with a good old-fashioned letter to Vinohradská 12, 12099, Prague. For me, Christian Falvey, thanks for listening, and I leave you with another piece of Antonín Dvořák's Requiem.